And then beyond that, if they could see past the trees, they would see the parking lot and then the buildings.
So by a 20-foot wide forested buffer, what are we talking about? We're talking about a couple bushes, a couple spindly trees, or what?
I'm sure they're spindly when they're first planted. There is a specific answer to that question. There is a specified seedling mix for the buffer area, which includes 12 seedlings per 12,000 per 1,000 square feet. And so if the buffer is 20 feet wide, 20 feet into 1,000, that's 50 feet. So there's 12 trees every 50 feet, and interspersed among the tree are other components of this woodland buffer seed mix, which I'm sure if my landscape architect was here, he could tell you exactly what was in it and all the...
And I recall, Mr. Johnson, that the ordinance requires that it be indigenous plants to Delaware rather than bringing in bamboo, which would be an obnoxious plant to bring in but would provide screening or...
So right. For the benefit of the folks that may be adjoining property owners, there is a buffer that goes beyond that of spindly trees that over time will grow and become somewhat of a sight barrier as well as a barrier to noise and.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
The spacing is no more than 15 feet on center. The planting legend includes 275 white oaks, 275 magnolias, 275 red cedars, 275 red maples, and 275 loblolly pines.
And it would also be part of the final site plan approval as when you get into the landscape, as well as the other issues that would be addressed at a final.
Mr. Willie, that exhibit that you have there, has that been on the board over here?
Yes.
Is that what was found? Because I didn't see what was on that board.
No, what's on the board is actually a black line of the site plan and a rendered site plan. What I'm looking at is exhibit L1.0.
My point is that your proposed development superimposed on that aerial view might be meaningful to some of these folks. I'd like you to mount it on this board over here. I think this one would be easier. Is it up there already?
No, it's up there. It just needs to be swapped.
Okay. Yep. Anyway, this was the exhibit that the gentleman was referring to when he was talking to us about the buffers. Anybody wants to get up and take a closer look at that, it should be fairly self-explanatory when you see it on there. But it's being superimposed on that aerial photograph may give you a better understanding of where you live relative to the whole thing and so on. So you're welcome to get up and take a look.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, while I refer to my sticky notes.
Okay. I think Mr. Ross is actually catching a plane at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, but other than that, we have plenty of time.
We're good until then.
Plenty of time.
Mr. Schrader, what would you anticipate the target market is going to be for this apartment complexes? Complex.
Target market in the sense as to income or
what kind of people?
Age?
Yeah, age. We talking seniors? We talking young families? We talking?
I don't know that we can actually answer that. I mean, basically, under the fair housing laws, they apply. We have to take everybody, and so it's not going to be advertised as a target market in the sense that you would, for instance, as a senior restricted RPC or the like. It is.
Open for all comers.
Pretty much first come, first served.
And not knowing who you might wind up with, what would you anticipate the number of school-age kids that would come out as a result of this?
I absolutely would not have any idea what to anticipate in that.
Yep, gentleman behind you does.
Linda, do you know?
I can only state that in the plus comment, they anticipated 108 children.
Because I saw in the plus comments there were concerned that all of the Keeping Open schools are at or beyond 100% of current capacity, which is kind of mind-boggling since they just built a new high school. But and so much for planning, right?
Starting September 8th, they're going to have a lot of capacity. They have one school building they're going to close.
I also saw in the plus comments there was talk about relocating the swimming pool and the clubhouse to a more central location, and I thought I saw a drawing somewhere where that kind of showed up as being elsewhere. Jim, you got that?
I can confirm that that was one of the comments. Our response was that we would look into it. Their suggestion was that perhaps the recreational facility should be located interior to the project. As I testified earlier, in consultation with our land planner, we liked the idea of the playground, community center, and pool being the front door to our development. Obviously, if during the approval process as a condition of site plan that the commission felt it was also appropriate to move it to an interior spot, there is room to do so.
And how about my favorite paved multimodal or multi-sport court? Any plans for that, or we're just going to give swing sets and sandboxes?
Well, the tot lot is, in fact, not your multimodal sport court. But we again, there's the one open space is about 3/4 acre. The one along the entrance road, again, probably not the best place for a basketball court or tennis if you're chasing balls out into the street. And the site down at the bottom where we anticipated the turf grass, as we called it on the planning plan, is almost 2 acres. So there is room to provide that.
Okay. And before I stop and give someone else a chance, Mr. Schrader, back to your original question about the healthy living. Mm-hmm. I hope that if you do provide a community garden area, that it's not in the area that they were dumping the raw sewage in the years past. Good fertilizer, maybe, in your case.
It's been in the ground. It's been in the ground for a while.
It's been purified.
Probably pretty good stuff.
Yeah. Right.
Well, if you want to have some fun, we can always ask the Denrick people back up and see what methane does to a garden. Well, but I'm not ready to do that.
You may have the opportunity to ask that question before it's over. Is that it for you,
Mr.? I'm done for a while, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Mr. Burton.
Yes. The interconnectivity that we talked about.
Yes, sir.
Where is the placement?
I don't recall that it was specifically.
Well, it is actually shown on the one of the preliminary site plans in your book. The sidewalk shown extends. In fact, you can see on this one, extends right there. You'll see the bright and the dark green. That is the sidewalk extending to the Hagel Point development. It appears that if it was interconnected, it would wind around behind stormwater management pond to the existing sidewalks that you can see on this aerial photo. So the interconnectivity would not come out immediately adjacent to these existing buildings. I'm not quite sure. Obviously, there are, at the time of this aerial photo, there's other buildings that either are or have been constructed in this area. But it basically comes out behind the stormwater pond, phase one.
The break that I show on this drawing here is nowhere near the stormwater management pond. Am I looking at that right there? And this right here being the stormwater management
pond? I'm at the stormwater pond on Eagle Point.
Oh, okay. Okay. I got it. The plan would be only for one at this point?
That's what we have so far, yes, sir.
Following up on Mr. Johnson's buffering thing, would the buffers be put in as all of phase one, or are you going to phase in the buffering?
I testified earlier that we were going to put in the buffers, stormwater management, and recreational amenities all as part of phase one.
Okay, so yes, the entire 20-foot will be planned. And just one more.
I'll probably be writing my client a check for that.
The your testimony, in renting these places, do they stay long? Are they quick turnover rental units?
I think they're year-to-year leases is what you're intending. The Delaware Landlord-Tenant Code says that all leases are year-to-year, and so you're gonna, it will not be, if the concern is it going to be seasonal or week-to-week, the answer is no, it will not be that. When you say long-term, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, but multiples of years, unless there's a default.
Okay. Do they typically, does one family or one group stay for a long time? Do you have any long, is that how these communities?
Ma'am, if you're going to speak, I need you to come up.
You need to stand. Yeah.
If they're managed properly, they will. That's the whole key, is we want people to stay for long periods of time. So we'll do everything we can to retain people.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions at this time.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, other commissioners, for getting some good information to form some opinions on these requests as conditional use and change of zone request. I do have two questions I would like to ask. I'd like to have Mr. Kennedy, if you would, sir, stand back up. And if you could just please speak into the microphone so everyone could hear. Would you mind quickly repeating your credentials as a traffic consultant?
Sure. I am a senior project manager with Orth Rogers and Associates. We're a transportation planning and engineering firm. I have over 15 years of experience.
Hold on a, ladies and gentlemen,
that includes you, Mr. Schrader. We're having trouble hearing up here.
Yeah, we're really having trouble here.
Tip your mic up.
You need to tip that mic up a little bit, too. And
thank you.
Shout out loud and proud, son. Go ahead.
Okay. For the record, my name is Derek Kennedy. I'm a senior project manager with Orth Rogers and Associates. I have over 15 years of experience in transportation planning and traffic engineering. I hold a certification as a professional transportation planner, and I have a bachelor's of science degree in construction management.
Thank you, sir. And was your testimony, because you were up here at the docket about a half hour ago, a synopsis of that, if I were to say that what you were saying, the recommendations of DLDOT that are requested or to be imposed upon this developer, if it should be approved, would be the recommendations of DLDOT whether this application was in front of us tonight or not?
That's right, with the exception of site entrance improvements and frontage improvements that are specific to the site, yes.
And you studied, I believe you said, six or seven intersections in the area, starting with Five Points, Plantations Road, Robinsonville Road, Shady Grove, et cetera.
Correct.
Postal Lane.
Yes.
And any improvements there would be a part of a greater plan of DLDOT, whether this application was in front of us or not.
Correct.
Thank you, sir. That's all. And Ms. Linda Smith, if I could, well, or whomever, I don't know. The rental program, one of the things that we try to evaluate when we evaluate a request for a conditional use is to evaluate need, to which I think you spent some time indicating that there is indeed a need for affordable rental housing. The 200 of the 216 units, 33 are going to be dedicated to the SCRP. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Which is, according to my math, and Mr. Johnson's our finance guy, but that's 15.28%, which is just 0.28% higher than the minimum recommended by the SCRP. If there's such a need, is there a reason why you stopped at 33 units and didn't expand to 66 units?
Let me defer that to
34 units.
Can I defer that? Because that wasn't involved in that.
I may not have picked the right person.
Hi, I'm Rick Banning, the developer for the project. Per the ordinance, I believe, and I can't speak totally for the ordinance, but per the Sussex County rental ordinance, it is specified that that we are required to allocate 15% of the total units to affordable housing.
As a minimum, correct?
Don't know exactly whether it's minimum or 15% or, you know, maximum. within the code in and of itself, I would have to
verify. I don't think it's a maximum.
And that may be in tab two, but your testimony is that you are supplying the minimum or the mandated number.
Correct.
SCRP.
Correct.
Yeah. Fair enough.
That's all. Thank you.
All right. Just to clarify that actually what it says is applicants with 65 or more units must contribute 15% of all units to the SCRP inventory, with the minimum being 26 SCRP units.
26 units. So there's a minimum number of units, but it's a 15% requirement. There you go. Okay. All right. Mr. Ross.
I'll try to be brief. There's considerable excavation that's already occurred at the site. I was there the other day. What's that going to look like? I mean, on the plats and all, perfectly flat. What's it going to look
like? Well, the excavation is part of the process of
cleaning it up.
Remediation.
Right.
The answer is it does have to be brought to grade and filled, and assuming that it is in compliance with the remediation plan that DENREC will require. It does have to be brought to grade and relatively level in order for it to be developed as a part of, you know, in the project. It's not going to look like an 18-acre, I don't know, it's a mini mountain.
But it's going to be brought to grade?
Yeah.
Okay. I yield the rest of my time to the public.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I kind of left this out, and I didn't mean to, but... Okay. Let's talk about the unmarked graves, and can you have someone show us where they possibly may exist on this property?
Yes, I can. Actually, I have it in my hand, sir. And what you're going to find is that is
Mr. Willie, I'm going to ask you to stand up over there and point to whatever Mr. Schrader is pointing to so these folks can see. Okay?
It's right about in this area, Mr. Johnson. This is the only copy of this particular document I have, but I'll be glad to let you have it. This is a portion of the Eagle Point Section 1 final approved site plan. Oops, sorry, I got to looking at the document back in person. And this document shows that there is a grave area that extends over into this particular project, and at the time Eagle Point was approved, there was a walkway, and the grave area was to be marked and set off, and this would be between Building J and Building H within Eagle Point.
Within Eagle Point. So there is access right now.
And there was also a reference in a letter from Clay Stokem that came in late that indicates that three of the four boundaries of the area are known. The fourth boundary is not. That would have to be determined.
So that so as part of your planning process for this, there would be efforts made to preserve all those unmarked grave sites, and as perhaps as well as to
we need to locate them. We need to locate them. We need to find out what's there, who's there, perhaps if that's possible, and take the appropriate steps to preserve the grave sites with the reverence that's intended by the act.
Thank you.
Are you good?
I'm good.
Okay, Mr. Lank.
I'm going to get back to interconnectivity again.
Okay.
If I may.
All right.
There's a section as you're going into the project, you pass the clubhouse and the pool, and there appears to be an interconnection of pavement. And it also appears that they're proposed to be occupied by two dumpsters. Is that a correct evaluation of that site plan?
Are you speaking about this spur down there?
Yeah.
Right. That is. You may remember I made testimony to the fact that they asked for, Delgado asked for a spur road to the Thompson parcel.
Yeah, I was just trying to locate that's where it is.
That is where it is. And okay. In fact, we thought that putting dumpsters there was probably a good use for it until such time as it would be necessary. You will also notice on the site plan that there are other dumpster locations. Those are not the only two.
That's fine. That was just observation. I wasn't sure if that was there, because one drawing appeared that there was not a connection.
Okay.
Another drawing appeared that it goes to the property line. And it appeared that one was a dead end stop before you got to the property line.
No, that is the requested road to Thompson Park.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
Okay. Mr. Abbott?
No questions.
Council?
No questions, but just to follow up on a question that was asked by somebody about who the tenants are for these units. This is as much for the commission as the public, because this is the first one that we've seen. First of all, the terms of the leases are for a period of 1 year. They can renew it. as long as they're still in good standing under the lease and they still qualify. As I mentioned before, the department's involved in figuring out who the tenants are going to be. The department actually maintains the list of eligible tenants. Eligible tenants have to be Sussex County residents for a year prior. They have to submit tax returns and things like that. And they have to meet the criteria for that. Once they're
Our department,
county's department. Once the county determines they're eligible, any person that owns one of these, rental housing complexes that participates in the program would then go to the department and say, we have an availability for one of our units. And then the department, I guess, essentially would take the next person or family on the list that qualifies, supply that name to the company, and get them in that unit. And then they're in for a year. So, again, it's sort of a new thing that the county's involved in, and I don't think we've seen one of those. I want to let everybody know how that works.
Yeah, and I don't think the administrative details have been resolved by the department at this point.
And that's all the questions I had. I just wanted to make that clear since it came up. It's not going to be transient. You have to be a resident. It's got to be at least a year for these units.
Mr. Chairman, while we have the attention of our council.
Sure.
On this interconnectivity issue with DelDOT, can DelDOT force an adjoining property owner to open their project up to this project?
I don't see how they could. That's already received final site plan, and DelDOT has already given their comments on the time.
Unless there's something on their final site plan that says they have to do it.
Yeah.
You mean on the
other adjoining property?
The adjoining property.
Yeah, on the other site.
So if they're done and DelDOT hasn't made that a requirement of them, they don't have to allow access.
I think DelDOT would have a tough time trying to require that.
Okay.
And according to the final site plan, Mr. Johnson, the Eagle Point Section 1 is private access drives. And as an example, the copy that I was showing you just a minute ago with the grave area also shows a small stub street called Village Drive, which generally heads in the direction of Home Depot. I don't know that it really goes to Home Depot, but I would be somewhat surprised if Home Depot, if they did allow it, they did allow it. But there is no other provision, at least for the portion that I'm looking at, of Parcel C, for any interconnectivity that was approved as a part of their final site plan. And I'll supplement what Mr. Robertson said. I don't think on private streets, DelDOT can make them public without exercising the power of eminent domain.
Right. It would be a taking.
If they do, boy, it's going to get real expensive for DelDOT in a hurry because they're going to have to buy all the streets.
Thank you.
All right, sir. Trader, if you would be so kind as to take a seat.
Thank you.
See if there's anyone here with an interest in your application. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of change of zone number 1687 and or conditional use number 1845, Rick Banning? Okay, we know there are some folks that would like to speak in opposition.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. He's just getting up to take a walk.
I saw him raise his hand for a second. I thought he was going to speak.
Okay.
My apologies.
Okay. You all have been wonderfully patient. Now is your time. I would like to start with the gentleman over here, because I know he has a question. Come on up, sir. The procedure, ladies and gentlemen, is that you will come up front, give us your name, and then you can have the floor. And if you have a question of one of the experts, I'd like you to ask me, and then we'll see if we can get an answer for you.
Thank you.
All right, sir. Go ahead.
First, my name is Ken Broman. I live in Eagle Point. I came here from Maryland, and I'm a Delaware resident, and we love Delaware, and we love Lewis, and we love the Eagle Point community. That's who I am.
Okay.
Second, I want to apologize for my wife's cell phone. That was hers.
Blame it on.
Wasn't mine.
Blame it on your wife.
I don't know.
She sold her out, didn't
it? At home. I forgot.
Sold her out.
She looked at me and went like this.
Well, if you notice, I had trouble shutting it off because I couldn't figure how to operate it. Two, I'm 68 years old, and I tend to forget a lot, and I'm trying to think what the devil I was going to ask. And I know it was something, but it'll come to mind in a second. But I have to say, I took a little bit of an exception to the Honorable Counsel, And the exception was when he was referring to this new community that mm-hmm. they're looking to build, mm-hmm. and he was referring, it said it was behind Home Depot. It's not behind Home Depot. It's behind Eagle Point. So you are wrong, counsel.
No, 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 sir. You need to talk to
me. Oh, I'm sorry. He was wrong. Could you please tell him that?
No, because technically he is right, because it is further behind. It is right behind you. But Home Depot is further out, and technically it is
now,
behind Home Depot.
Home Depot is behind Eagle Point. And on the other side is the Chesterfield community, to which I'm not familiar with.
All right.
But I just remembered the question.
Good.
The question was really with regard to the pollution, and that is the brownfield. And I was not coming here to address that issue at all. I just came here to be quiet, just listen and find out what's going on. But I happen to own a marina in Maryland, and I bought it about 6 years ago, and I had to have an environmental impact study done. When they did that, they went through phase one and phase two and phase three. And the reason being is when it got to phase two, they had a company come in from South Carolina, which I would recommend if they're going to have an environmental impact study, they have it done from an outside source. Then it's, you know, there's no questions. When they did a little bit of earth scraping, they found a little bit of problem. Mm-hmm. So they followed up with core samples. And they went down to the aquifer, and they found toluene. So my question to the group, and I'm assuming that they would do that, that they're looking for other than methane gas.
Oh, yeah.
Because as we know with a brownfield, and all you probably know, it deteriorates and it works out, and the half-life goes forever. And that's very important. So I cleaned my marina up, and it cost me hundreds of thousands. And I'm happy to tell you, if you look under Oak Harbor, we're something called a clean marina. And I would hope that site would be a clean site. The other issue that I have is, why on earth, if you've got three things going wrong, you've got a brownfield, a potential septic site, you've got a field where there is possible desecration of the Chippewa Indians, is that correct? I don't know.
Nanticoke.
Is that correct?
Nanticoke.
Well, I'm from New England. I'm sorry. And if you got two things going wrong, why do you even want to build on the site? What incentive is there for someone coming in that wants to rent and knowing that they are going to live? You're talking about children with swimming pools, with
Let me ask you something.
Yes.
Let me kind of hold you right here for a second.
Go ahead.
Did you just tell me that you paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to have a marina cleaned up?
Yes.
Is it still dirty?
No.
All right, then. There's your answer.
That's correct. I want to make sure that the question is, are they willing to spend all that money, and is it worth it?
Well, let me tell you something. It ain't going to happen if they don't. So
well,
I don't
you know, that's a good point.
No,
that's
it ain't going to happen if they don't.
It's an excellent point. You have a good point. So. But I'm assuming they are going to go through a phase two and a phase three environmental impact study and do the whole thing. And do it right.
Well, the
that was my question.
Right.
For that.
Well, the names of the phases and all that are obviously going to be different because you're referring to something that took place
Correct.
In Maryland, and we haven't bought Maryland yet. But when we do, we will straighten that out for them.
No, okay. we came here because we're hoping you would.
but yes, there's a very specific requirement. There is a report in the files, a matter of public record. You might want to stop by the office and get a copy of it tomorrow. Of the findings and so on. And with your knowledge of having been through this, I think it would make a lot of sense to you. You would understand what they were saying. So if you get an opportunity, Mr. Lank or Mr. Abbott would be happy to get to hunt that up for you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Last thing, you know, I moved to Maryland. I moved to Delaware. It's a vacation area.
Mm.
Lovely. I love the peace. I like the serenity. It's quiet. You know, I drove here and I drove through so much open area. You could put 1,000 rental units. Why do you try and cluster everything in one area? And the last one is Plantation Road. We all know that's the escape road from the seasonal tourists, which I once was. And I've been coming here since 1966, Barb? 1966. That's how long I've been supporting this economy. And it's Plantation Road. It's so small now. There's accidents all the time. You're going to put almost 1,000 people, 216 units, four per unit, maybe five. Who knows? These kids are going to grow up, teenagers, they're going to have cars. Is Plantation Road going to be a four-lane divided highway? I don't know. I'm making a comment. Thank you very much.
All right, sir. Thank you. Okay, who's next? Okay, we'll take this gentleman right here. And then after you, this lady over here. How's that? All right, sir.
Hi, thank you. I'm Jack Murphy. I live in Plantations East. Mm-hmm. And a couple of things kind of struck me. One of them, you're talking about 216 units. Well, the surrounding area has many more than that.
Correct.
And there's a range estimated, and I understand why it's got to be a range, of 175,000 to a million grants to clean up the area. What about the rest of us? We number many, many more people than they are putting in, and no one ever thought of cleaning it up on our behalf. The second thing is, they cite DLDOT for an awful lot, but Plantations Road, there's no polite way to put it. We beat back their last attempt to broaden it, and we're ready to go after this. I don't think anybody should be counting on an expansion of Plantations Road. The methane business, I think you should consider the New York City dump, which is the largest man-made project in the world. It wasn't intended that way, but it became that. Houses miles away have special fans in the basement to blow out methane. So I understand gases rise, but they have different weights, just as solid material does. And that's something that should be thought of. And the final thing, and this is the scariest to me, just where does this sit with regard to our aquifer that's providing our drinking water? And I'd like an definitive answer on that from someone, if anybody knows. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, I was going to get an answer to your question, but they seem to be anxious. So you want to hang on this for a second? Our friends from Denrec maybe want to comment on the aquifer intrusion possibilities or anything like that, or Mr. Schrader, anybody on your team that can speak to that? You guys probably should sit closer to the front. I think a lot of people want to hear from you. Go ahead. Yeah, the question is, what's the relationship between the aquifer and what's going on there, and should there be concern?
Okay. As I said, in the previous plan, there was a restriction on groundwater, meaning no groundwater wells could be installed on the property for drinking water purposes. And as we understand, it's going to be on public water. So that source isn't from on site. It's a public utility off site. The groundwater management zone, which is an agreement between us and our Division of Water Resources, means that if there is an application to install a well, it would be flagged because this site is there. So we have that check in place to make sure. Recent groundwater sampling, which they did quarterly, I believe in 07, so four times that year, there were no issues above our concentrations. And like I said, we have established levels. It's not zero, but it's one that's risk-based, determined to not cause an increased risk to anyone should they be ingested, or there's a lot of different scenarios. So groundwater management zone now restricts any groundwater wells going in the shallow aquifer. And I don't have that plan with me. If you would like that, it has all the details outlining which one, which aquifer is now.
I think the question was probably more to the idea is there any evidence that this particular site is causing any harm to the water? To the water in that area, to the aquifer, to the drinking water that's going to the surrounding people. Second part of that question is what these folks are proposing to do going to make that situation worse?
Well, as I said, we haven't investigated fully, but when we do, if the remediation plan is to remove, which they have removed some, you remove the source, then You know, you don't have anything contributing to, potentially contribute to the aquifer. So right now, we were made aware that there's public utilities supplying water in the area, and we have the restriction, so no future water wells can be installed for people to drink. If there's, for the potential of exposure of anything on site that may be leaching into groundwater. But like I said, they've removed some. If they continue to remove it, remove the source, nothing else there to contribute.
So people being on the public water source, there is no none of that withdrawal from the aquifers in that surrounding area, because I believe someone from over on the supporting the project did state that there is not in a critical water recharge area, which means that there's no there's no pumps taking water out of the aquifer in that area.
Okay, thank you. Take a seat, preferably nearby. Yes, ma'am, you're next.
My turn.
Your turn. You're up.
My name is Mary Cox. I'm a resident of Eagle Point, and we're now calling ourselves the Eagle Point Coalition. We have a group of 12 people who have written testimony with little redundancy that covers a variety of subject areas that I think are highly pertinent to the development of the Arbiters of Cottagedale. And the first person we would like to have speak with you is the Nanticoke Indian Chief Jackson, if that's all right.
Yeah, that's okay.
Thank you.
Good evening, everyone.
How are you?
Chairman. Thank you, Commission. Thank you for your time.
Sir, you need to introduce yourself. Okay, I know she introduced you, but we need to match your name with your voice.
My name is Larry Jackson.
Okay, thank you.
I'm the chief of the Nanticoke Indians here in Delaware. I reside in Milton, Delaware. I am employed with Delmarva Power. I'm a family man with three kids. Been married for 15 years. There's one question, and I'm not sure if it's an opportunity that I have to ask a question.
Go right ahead.
There's one question then that I haven't heard asked this evening, and if it has been asked, I didn't hear it. If this development or apartment complex takes place, which I definitely oppose, and just for some reason or another that people start getting sick, the tenants start getting sick, who is responsible? Are these gentlemen and young lady behind me, are they responsible? Is Mrs. Hall and her counterpart tonight with Denrek, are they responsible? I think that's a pretty fair question. The reason being because when people start getting sick, and prayerfully, hopefully, not a fatality of any sort, who's responsible? You guys responsible? That's a question I had. The units, I understand, are 9 units or 9 buildings, 24 units. I'm not very good at math, but the minimum I come up with is 500 tenants. The maximum, probably around 1,000. I have a brother here tonight that lives on McKenzie Way Road, the road that takes you back to this proposed development. He has a very difficult time today getting out on Plantation Road, a very difficult time. And he's here tonight to witness that. I talked to John Fiore with DelDOT just a week ago. And from what he tells me, that the testing that they've done for traffic has actually expired. It has to be rekindled again because the time period has gone by. Israel United Methodist Church, a church that I grew up at, is a preservation historical site. And there's a concern there of the property of Israel United Methodist Church, and there's individuals here tonight that I'm sure will elaborate on that. Before I read my letter, there's a few other things I'd like to ask. The funds, what I understand tonight, is going to be like $1 million, possibly, to clean up the Jackson Pit. The way the economy is today, is that a good way to spend the American dollar?
Cleaning up a waste site?
Well, wait a minute, sir. Mr. Chairman.
Just want to make sure I understand what you're asking.
Yeah. First of all, that waste site is fine just the way it is. Matter of fact, wildlife live in that area. The white-tailed deer live in that area, among other animals. We're building so much today that the deer are running out in the road and people are hitting these deer. A lot of people are getting hurt. The insurance commission has jacked these prices up because of these type of accidents. We're pushing the wildlife out into the public roads. So this area right now, as we speak, is the area that wildlife live in. Let's donate it. Let's do something for the wildlife. Let's donate this to the wildlife. Nothing has to be cleaned up there. The wildlife living there today, well satisfied. But I guarantee you, if you build on this site and someone gets sick, nobody behind me in this first row is going to say, I'm responsible. DENREC is not going to say, I'm responsible. JCM, the gentleman here who represents JCM, I have documentation that the workers, while they were doing cleaning the site, had received headaches that lasted more than 2 days. Am I right, sir?
We're not going to have any questions.
What other gases other than methane that we haven't talked about tonight that's harmful to the human being? I'm sure there's others there.
What makes you say that?
Well, it's a dump site. When you have dump sites, anything like that contains more than just methane. Mr. Strader had used Draper Cannery, for example. That's no comparison. Draper Cannery was a factory, not a dump site. No comparison whatsoever. Gentlemen, I just ask you tonight to consider what these people are here in opposition are saying to you. There's a lady here with me tonight. Her name is Mrs. Cassandra Corsi Marshall. And she has written this letter, and I'm not going to read all her letter because I'm not going to steal her thunder. But there's something I think is very important. And this says several months ago, the development, I'm not saying these recent months, but this is, I'm not exactly sure what time frame this is, but several months ago, the developer for the Arbors of Cottagedale wanted to know if he could move our fence back 2 feet. This is the fence that the Native American burial ground is at. The answer was absolutely no. If the fence is moved a mere 8 inches, it will be sitting on top of the head and of the adult coffins in the gravesite. It was disheartening for me to learn that greed negates respect for our deceased ancestors and their descendants. The question should never have been asked. And I can understand how she feels the way she does. The Native American people, including the Nanticoke people, years ago did not bury our dead the way we bury our dead today. They're shallow graves. I go on with my letter. So the Nantico Indian people would like to go on record as opposing any building or growth to this particular area. Located nearby is the Norwood Corsi Jackson Daisy Cemetery, which is visibly marked. We are certain that directly adjacent to this cemetery, that the potential for many more unmarked human remains of the Nantico elders. Furthermore, this building site will encompass the Jackson Pit, Delaware number 0149, which was used for many years for dumping of many toxic and perhaps illegal products. This development is being built to house poor families with children. We oppose the use of this area for any human dwelling. This property and adjacent Israel United Methodist Church are traditional Nantico Indian properties. Today, many tribal members are located in this vicinity. Our tribal members feel we must actively and orally oppose any and all growth of building in this area. The tribe concurs with the Delaware State Division of Historical and Cultural Affairs until the archaeologists are given the opportunity to further investigate the subject property. We oppose any further disruptions of the area in question. All efforts must be made to identify if, in fact, there are human remains which could be exposed. Such discovery would require compliance with Delaware Code Title 7, Chapter 54, and could impede any further development. Sussex County has been contacted for the historical and cultural entity and is awaiting an answer. In 2005, an effort was made by this entity to the county through the PLUS process to no avail. We challenged NREC to carefully and thoroughly gain knowledge of this particular site before any additional cleanup under the Brownsfield program. The Sussex County Planning and Zoning Commission, the Sussex County Council, the City of Lewis, and households adjacent to said area should be aware that Nantico people object strenuously to this project being proposed by the Robito Cottagedale LLC. We oppose any and all building of this site. The children who will suffer the consequences of what is left behind need to be spoken for. This development will also stress the heavy traffic on plantation roads and other private and public roads. We suggest the developers consider property held nearby. This land is owned by the state of Delaware and could become a safe, healthy, and prosperous building site. And the land I'm referring to, if you're familiar with Route 23 near Belltown, there's land there that's wide open field. It has no dump site on it, has no grave site on it. You know, these gentlemen, this young lady, they're proposing something tonight. And I'm not saying I disagree with what they're proposing. I'm disagreeing where they want to build it.
Okay.
Yep. Both federal and state laws exist to prevent desecration and destruction of graves. These laws must be complied with. Native Americans, similar to people from most cultures, have a religious and spiritual reverence for the remains of their ancestors. Preservation of the grave of our ancestors is a critical issue for us, and we will do everything within our power to prevent their desecration and destruction. We would appreciate your support and assistance in this matter. Thank you.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Could I get a copy of that letter?
Which one?
The one you read. If you would. It's different from the one you mailed to me.
Well, I just added that.
Okay, can I get that? Thank you.
All right, who's next?
Chief, is there anyone else from your community who wanted to speak tonight?
My brother Urban.
Ma'am, I believe I'm running this public hearing.
I'm so sorry.
Okay, I appreciate your help. I know you're trying to help me, but just let me do it my way, if you would, okay? If you want to point to someone and say they're next, and they raise their hand and I see them, I'll be happy to call on them. Who's next? This guy right here has got his finger in the air. Come on down. Come on up. Tell us who you are, and you may have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, commission members. I'll be brief because the chief has covered much of what I would have said.
And your name is?
William Daisy. I'm assistant chief of Nanticoats.
Okay.
And as chief indicated, we certainly have a very serious concern regarding this project being built adjacent to the two grave sites. I'm surprised to hear that the developer wasn't aware of these grave sites because they're readily visible, and there was a letter from the Delaware Historic Office in 2004 indicating that they
I believe he indicated that he was aware of them. In fact, he showed us on the drawing where they were, so I think he knows where they are.
I know this is a recent drawing. Prior to that, it was not on the primary plan because it isn't, and we saw those, and this apparently is a recent plan.
Okay.
So I'm glad that he does recognize that they're there.
I got the word, yeah.
Right. And one other thing that was mentioned, too, regarding the buffer zone. And I believe the buffer zone, as far as graves are concerned, is 40 feet, not 20. And, of course, at Daisy Jackson Norwood Cemetery, there is a 40-foot buffer on three sides. It's not on the last side because, obviously, in the Jackson property.
Mm-hmm.
And, it also raised concern we didn't see it on the initial plan because it appeared as though those grave sites were being deliberately ignored. And, in the past we've had some serious problems with some developer, and I'm not accusing the present developer of anything that's wrong.
Right.
We've had developers desecrate and destroy grave sites at will. And so now some of them have resorted to covert actions, and we're concerned this might be part of a covert action to, if it's not seen, maybe no one's saying anything, and maybe go on that route. But give me the benefit of that, perhaps that wasn't the case. And we would, again, appreciate everything you gentlemen can do and to support us in this effort to prevent the desecration and destroying of Native American graves and make sure all the applicable laws are followed. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir, and I can assure you that we will do everything in our power to do that, certainly, absolutely. Okay, who's next? Okay, all right, all the way in the back, the blue shirt. Rather familiar looking gentleman, but he will have to give us his name for the record.
I'm Representative Pete Schwarzkopfer. I represent the 14th District. I represent the area that this project is located in. The way I understand it, you're being asked to upzone or increase the density from 80 to 216 units. 33 of those units are, quote, affordable. And to get those 33 units, they're requesting an additional 130 units that they'll be able to charge full price for. I think we all know exactly what's going on in that respect. This is a problematic property at best. It has a lot of issues. It's not just one issue you have to overcome here. You have density issues. You have the fact that the people that bought at Eagle Point bought with the expectation that at most there would be 80 units behind them. Now they're requesting 216 units. You have traffic issues, which I will talk about in just a second. You have Native American burial site issues. You have environmental issues. You have water issues. I've even heard tonight talk about school issues with the number of children that might be going to our schools. When we talk about the DLDOT issues, I can assure you, I've heard some talk about Plantation Road being a four-lane highway. I can assure you that's not going to happen. I will fight that with every breath I have. And Secretary Wicks is aware of that. Secretary Wicks is not in favor of doing a four-lane road. I do know that the earlier version of the traffic study stated that Plantation Road would be a four-lane road until I got into it and contacted Secretary Wicks, and then they changed that. A lot of these other intersections that are dealing with the improvements that the developer would have to make are being piggybacked or ponied with DLDOT's anticipated improvements, which are at best 6, 8, 10, 15 years in the future. This development would be in place for many, many years before these projects are improved by DLDOT. They don't have the money, number one. The only one that's even being considered at this point is Postal Lane Connection. That's the only one, and that's south of the project. There has been some talk about relocating Route 9 and having a traffic light at Shady Road. That's just talk right now. We're talking that project is probably 15 to 20 years down the road. We do not have money for road projects right now. Even with stimulus money coming in, we're not even far enough along in the projects to do anything with the stimulus money in this respect, in that area at all. I can say that I've listened to Denrek here tonight. I'm a little disappointed, and I will be calling. I have talked to Secretary O'Mara about this, and I will be talking to him again tomorrow.
What's the nature of your disappointment?
Number one, this brownfield has been here for years and years and years, and nobody cared. Nobody cared anything about it. Nobody wanted to try to clean it up for the people who lived in that area. They didn't try to clean it up for the people who live in Eagle Point. They're having problems with their water right now. They want to drill wells. They're probably not going to be allowed to drill wells because of the water. Why all of a sudden, because somebody wants to develop this land and put 216 units in there, are they now willing to put money aside and help to clean this land up? They should have been cleaning it up for the safety of the people that already live there. I just want to say that the people behind me here in this room and thousands of others on the east side of this county have lost confidence. The county government is looking out for their best interests. I want you to show them the wrong. Look out for their interests. Any one of these issues alone should be enough to just stop this project from being expanded. 80 units, that's what it calls for. Let them have it. That's what everybody else in the area expects. But all these things taken in conjunction with each other, it just doesn't seem like it makes any sense. Show these people behind me that they're wrong. Show them that there are people in county government that do care about the citizens that live here and their concerns where they live. Thank you.
All right, sir. Thank you. Mrs. Granke.
Good evening, and I do thank all of you for the time and the careful questions that you've asked tonight. It's appreciated, believe me. I'm here tonight, I'm Mabel Granke.
Good job.
And I'm here tonight for the Citizens Coalition. Mike Tyler, our president, is away on a trip to Alaska. And I want to say to you that this is really something that needs to be considered very carefully. And I will read what I have written. The Citizens Coalition has been and continues to work for responsible land use, sustainable development, and managed growth. And we wish to state that we come tonight in support of the residents of Eagle Point and all residents affected by the change of zone and conditional use applications before you. First, the change of zone request to upzone the land to medium residential should be considered on its merits without the confusion of how the site could be developed. The proposal to build on a designated brownfield is paramount to public safety and health. If the existing residential development, as well as those who would live on the site, the brown site, it has been reported that workers who came on the site became ill. This must be verified before any decision is made to disturb this site. It must be determined if it is safe to work on and even consider for human habitation. A three-dimension grid should be established over the entire site so that you can adequately determine the extent of toxic materials, their depth, and leaching potential. And I would say to you that depth is exceedingly important, and 10 feet in no way is probably appropriate in terms of that consideration. In other words, the site must be certified as safe for human habitation before any decisions are made as to density of use. It is also important that recognition and proper protection of existing Native American burial sites be taken. The goal to provide owner or rental affordable housing is needed. It must not be at the expense of public safety and health, either of those who already live adjacent to the site or those asked to live directly on the site. It is recommended that CZ-1687 be deferred until such time that the site is certified for human habitation, and that your conditional use application should not even be considered at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, who's next? Yes, sir, over here with left hand in the air. There we go.
Have it.
My name is Harvey Morris. I'm administrative board chairman of Israel United Methodist Church.
Thank you.
And I would just like to read this letter.
Please do.
We, the members of Israel United Methodist Church, oppose the arbors of Cottagedale Apartments applications for placement of the apartments on the Brownfield Dump, aka Jackson Pit. The church has been in this area for over 150 years plus, and the surrounding property has been highly maintained to preserve this historical site and the surrounding cemetery. The entrance to and exit from the church parking lot areas on both sides of the church already pose a difficult and dangerous pathway onto Plantation Road. The proposed apartment complex reveals only one roadway in and out, as well as the only outlet for the project construction operations, which will also promote hazardous pollution. Therefore, we feel it is extremely unwise to add to the traffic congestion and serious environmental effects of toxic waste that is already present. We trust the Commission will take into consideration the historical preservation of Israel United Methodist Church and the cemetery surrounding the property and the environment, and strongly urge you to please decline approval of this multifamily development or any future applications for this brownfield property. The future of assuring that our citizens and children live in a safe environment remains within the power of your decision. So please protect our community and roadway. Thank you.
All right, sir. Well, thank you. All the way over here on the right, and then, ma'am, you will be next. Don't let me forget.
My name is Stephen Smith. I'm a resident of Eagle Point.
Yes, sir.
Back in the 1970s, I worked for Wrecking Corporation of America, located in Northern Virginia. My job was foreman with asbestos removal and demolition in the District of Columbia. DENRAC this evening has said that they would be monitoring the removal operation if that goes into effect. I merely want to point out, because I live right next door, how the law states certain things, but how companies can circumvent the law if they're not being observed. My information is that not only did individuals have headaches moving earth last year, but their skin bubbled on their face and on their arms.
Their what?
Skin bubbled on their face and on their arms. They had to stop working.
Did you see this yourself?
I did not see it, but a person...
Did a medical doctor tell you this?
A person who lives in our area saw it.
And did they see it?
They said they did.
Did they know what they were looking at?
They know that the work stopped. That's all I can say. I'm just concerned because we have numerous inferences of possibilities. My request is this, that if and when any sort of cleanup occurs, I would really like to know that DENRAC would be on site in an ongoing way and merely monitor whatever happens. The Doxy Clam Company put all sorts of stuff in there, apparently. So there are a lot of things that may have gone into that ground, and I think you're going to have additional testimony as to some of the actual toxins.
Okay.
But we need oversight in a daily basis. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yes, ma'am, you're next.
My name is Elizabeth Collard. I'm a resident at Eagle Point. I am also part of the coalition, and I have some graphics that I would like to share with you tonight, if I may. I'd like to start with what the arbors of Cottagedale was supposed to look like. This was 2.5 years ago when we bought our property. We were told to look on site to see what a wonderful community was going to be directly behind us.
Right.
This is a plan that shows 80 condo units that supposedly were going to be selling for approximately $350,000. Also shows lots of green space, walkways, things that would be attractive to the buyer. In the ensuing 2.5 years, obviously things have changed, as you have heard all evening long. And now we're looking at essentially the same configuration for the new 216-unit rental units. However, the site hasn't changed in terms of what we are showing you regarding Eagle Point. Eagle Point now has 26 completed buildings. There are two more that are under construction, and there are two remaining buildings to be completed for a total of 120 total. Those are not on here. They ring two sides of this property in very, very close proximity. The buffer zone that's being spoken about is minuscule in terms of distance. In addition, we're talking about the three-story buildings being, I believe, 52 feet in height, which is considerably higher than our houses are. And that's not something that we can fight, obviously, but it does make a difference. I want you to take a look at a visual that shows you, the end of Eagle Point property over to Rolling Meadows. It is very, very limited in size. And when you look at the plan that is being projected, for the 216 rental units, we're now looking at, thank you. I just want to make sure I don't have it upside down. We're now looking at what is sort of a barracks kind of arrangement in the housing. We have 432 parking spaces and an additional 41 elsewhere. Lots and lots of impervious cover on the ground at this point. Keep in mind that we butt up very, very closely, but not just us, Rolling Meadows as well.
Okay.
And we're talking about, thank you. Thanks. We're talking about a view from the bottom steps of some of our buildings to the, I'm not sure if you can see it, but there are the boundary lines and the fences that are in place. That's one. We have the same situation, very short. We're concerned that whatever takes place over there in terms of the building and excavating of the land is going to be enough to cause us problems in terms of the methane gas, the other things that may in fact be buried under there that we don't know about at this point in time. In the spring of 2008, Rubino Builders started to excavate the land to level it off and start to pull out those things that were in the pit. And in doing so, left us with this.
Where is that? Is that on your property?
That is definitely on our property. The land, they just stopped. There wasn't any concern about what was going on, and every time it rained, we had a lake complete with ducks and waterfowl. You know, it's not a funny situation. It's really sort of pathetic. And I'm concerned that that's going to happen as they go along in their building process again. The one other thing that I wanted to show you was the image of the burial site. At this point down here is our roadway, our private roadway. They have the required 40 feet in all directions, except as it backs up. And so the concern there, because it is absolutely on the line, is that there is certainly a good probability that there are additional burial grounds beyond this site. I want to refer to a couple of things that were said earlier in terms of the traffic. In one of the plans that we had looked at, instead of just a couple hundred vehicles coming out, in and out, it referred to 1,700 entry and exits per day on Mackenzie Way in peak season. I also have a little bit of a concern about DENREC in terms of how do they substantiate the information that's given by a company that works for the builder? Where's the checks and balances there to make sure that everything is accurate? We have lots of concerns. As a community, we're looking for a vote from you that would oppose this. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Just real quick, ma'am, if you would, we need those photos just because you referred to them, so we have them as part of the record.
You're
record.
More than welcome to.
Okay. You can leave them in front of the...
Okay.
Well, whatever's convenient for you.
Okay, this lady right here with your hand held high. There we go.
Hello, my name is Betty Deacon. I live at 18201 Hickory Lane in Lewis, Delaware. Mm-hmm. That's in the community of Sandy Bray. Kathy Davison, who is the president of Sandy Bray, had to leave, and she asked if I would say a few words on behalf of the Sandy Bray board and the homeowners. Sandy Bray has 259 homes in it. We are on Wells. Everybody in the county forgets that, and everybody in the state forgets that. They come in saying we're on Tidewater. We're on Wells. So we are part of the aquifer. And I personally have someone living in my home who is a cancer survivor. So we are very concerned about the water in our area. So I would hope you would really take a close look at that. Sandy Bray is opposed to this. It is much too dense development. Kathy asked me to specifically say it's not about the folks who will be approved to move in there. It will be all the folks who will be coming with them in these 3- and 4-bedroom apartments. On my own behalf, I would like to say I bought my home 15 years ago. I didn't want sidewalks. I grew up in a city that was totally paved all the time. Even my backyard was cement. I moved into Sandy Bray because it didn't have sidewalks. I moved into that community to eventually retire there 3 years ago because I wanted a semi-rural area. We don't need to continue sticking all of this stuff together. We need to give the people on Plantation Road a little bit of relief here. And I want to tell you how impressed I am tonight with the people who are here. Just look at what the developers have brought together. 150-year-old church, Native American Indians, a new development in Eagle Point, Sandy Bray, which was one of the first developments ever in eastern Sussex County. And I've come to meet a lot of these folks, and we know each other. We talk constantly, we're not going to go away, and we don't want our neighborhood destroyed. I think we owe it to those who came before us and honor what you heard tonight about the Native American Indians and the church that's been there for 150 years, and we support them. Thank you.
Okay. All right, Mr. Glowiak.
Good evening.
Yeah, where you been? We haven't seen you lately.
Yeah, aren't you lucky? Anyway, members of the commission.
Said that, not me. I always kind of enjoy your comments, but go ahead.
All right. Now, you might not, I don't know. I made an observation that...
You need to say your name. I know I already did, but you need to say it.
All right. I'm Henry Glowiak. I'm vice president of the Citizens Coalition.
Okay, thanks.
All right. And appreciate being here. I made an observation tonight that was a little bit troubling, and I made a few notes. While I concur to all those people who spoke in opposition to this proposal tonight, I made an observation that is pertinent to this, to the final outcome of the proposal. I've been attending planning and zoning meetings and Sussex County Council meetings since I was 18 years old, 1974, as I was telling my age. And don't you ever recall seeing a DENREC representative or any other representative from any state agency give verbal testimony defending their respective department's position regarding land use decisions at a public hearing. This may have happened, I'm not sure, but I was not witness to it. If this is establishing a precedent, well, so be it, so that the public as a whole and other groups can also use verbal testimony as well as plus reports to our benefit also.
I think you've always had that privilege. I mean, there's nothing but would prevent you to have someone come and talk with us. I mean, we always call for public testimony.
Well, I think we're going to try that angle for now on, see how it works.
I think we would actually appreciate that because it means a lot to this group up here when we hear from other agencies and so on because they don't have a dog in the fight. These two people aren't going to get paid anymore where this development gets done or doesn't get done. They're telling us what they really think. And that carries an off tremendous amount of weight with this sure. group. I wish more of them would do it. I wish DelDOT would come every time, sit here with us, and come in and tell us why they're doing what they're doing.
That would be great.
Call them up and try and get them to do it, okay?
Actually, if you look at our charter, we have ex officio members from DelDOT, DENREC, Department of Ag.
That's right.
They're given due notice for our meetings. They never show up. We'd love to have them.
We would love to have those folks here. And if you all out there can rally those folks, please, please bring them with you.
It's great. I'd like to see more of that also.
I'm serious. I really would. Serious. Yeah. I really am.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it would be great to hear from. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, that's fine. No, I mean, it sounds like we're on the same page, and it sounds like all of us are.
Amen.
So I'm gonna press some more, of this and see what happens. And I'm sure that our DENREC representatives tonight were 100% objective, as I'm sure they are, of course, and as all public officials should be. But one thing that was troubling. The appearance in public view and the commission view, when the attorney for the developer, Mr. Schrader, handed a note to Mr. Ratzep of DENREC while he was speaking at the podium, struck me as though Mr. Schrader was trying to coach Mr. Ratzep. That was kind of troubling. It would be like while you were speaking, any one of you were speaking, or any other public official would be up here speaking, that I would hand them a note at the time. I just thought that was totally inappropriate. It's not good for public perception and raises a lot of questions about credibility of the public hearings themselves and what occurs. This is very troubling, and I just want to point it out to you. I thought it was inappropriate, and just wanted to bring that up.
All right, sir.
Thank you.
We thank you. Okay, all the way in the back, the green shirt standing up.
Hello. Good evening. My name is David Citro. I am a resident of Eagle Point. I'll be very brief. I had numerous issues, but one did smack me in the mouth when I was listening tonight, and it was about DENREC. And the issue is this. You did question this gentleman about what their role is, but it appears to me, at least from what I heard, is in a brownfield situation, and I think the word was they have a partnership. And I understand the reason for partnership, not to repeat all the infrastructures and all that, but the problem is, if DENREC, and that was the concern I did not have tonight until I heard that, because they are the state agency, they're going to take care of me. In this situation, they're a partner with them. Now, I'm not going to attack your credibility, but again, the perception is, if they're a partnership, they're going to do everything they can to try and make this work.
Let me explain to you how this works.
Yes,
okay?
Sir.
And we didn't create this, okay? Maybe it can be changed, okay? This is Denrec's opportunity to get this site cleaned up, okay?
Yes.
Now, somebody a few minutes ago testified that he just wondered why nobody had done anything, okay? Well, there is a body in this state and a body in this nation that can do it if they want to, okay? But so far, they haven't stepped up to the plate.
Correct.
This is what these folks have available to them, you know? And it's the trying to get something for everyone, okay? This is the thing. This is the mechanism that the legislature has given them to get these things cleaned up.
I get that.
Okay? That's the whole issue with them. And the reason why if I seem like I'm defending the Denrec folks, it's because I want them to come back.
Yes. No, I get that. I always do. But this is
a unique
situation.
Would any of you in your jobs volunteer to do what these folks have done tonight? I mean, we need that. I don't think that they're here necessarily to promote the development. They have their agenda. This is the way that the legislature has given them to get this done. And there's your problem.
Correct.
Your problem is not with these folks. Yeah. It's not with these guys up here. It's with the legislatures, the people that can do something about this.
But again, I'm not sure everybody in this room understands for the first time.
I
like
bet
myself,
they understand now. Anybody doesn't get that?
Yeah, the Denrec has a horse in this race.
Okay.
They have a horse in this race.
That's the deal. They have a horse in this race from the point of view that they want to get their brownfield cleaned up.
Correct.
That's what they want to do. They don't care if an apartment ever gets built or ever gets rented, okay?
However, though, when you have a partnership, is there not then an oversight for them?
That's the vehicle that they've been given to get the job done. And if you want it done a different way, you need to talk to the gentleman that spoke earlier and every one of his colleagues, and then maybe you'll get something done. But that's what they've got. That's all they've got.
Then we can be their oversight.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Mr. Chairman, before the next speaker comes up, I think there's a misunderstanding of the Brownfield program. You can find it on Denrec's website. You know, the Brownfield program is to do what these folks want to do because the state, you folks, don't have the money. We don't have the tax dollars to spend $1 million. So the Brownfield program was set up with a small amount of money to leverage with developers to clean up sites. Now, you might think that's a great deal for the developer, but I've read these Brownfield statements. There's a contract in here. Read it. The developer can go to jail. He's handcuffed. Denrec has a lot of power under the Brownfields Reclamation Program. They don't give up oversight, and they're leveraging a little bit of state dollars with a lot of developer dollars to clean up these sites because the U.S. government doesn't want to step in. We as taxpayers don't have the money. So I don't think, in defense of the Brownfield, and if you folks have a better explanation, you're welcome to give it, but I think there's a misunderstanding of the Brownfield program and what it's intended to do and why it is the way it is. So just, you know, this project will enable a site that is not good to become good. There's some trade-offs, no question. But understand how the program is set up and why it was set up. And it was really set up because we, taxpayers, don't have the money to do what this project could do for us. So.
Thank you, sir. Very good. Yes, sir, right over here. And by the way, I want to remind everybody it's one trip to a customer. So if you think of something that you wanted to say, just snag somebody that hadn't been up here yet. So, yes, sir, go right ahead.
My name is Craig Lack. I live at Eagle Point. I have a doctorate in chemical engineering. I'm a Delaware licensed engineer and have 30 years of experience in industry working on a variety of chemical issues.
Okay.
I apologize. I didn't know what the format was here, so I have handouts for the council,
sure,
the board, so you can follow along. For the people here, you can look at it afterwards.
Now, that'll be in the file. You can look at it.
Thank you. What I wanted to talk about tonight is that the question came up earlier. This is about responsibility. Who's responsible now? Who's going to be responsible 10 years from now? I did read nearly all the documents on Denrec's website regarding brownfield cleanups. And correct me if I'm wrong, but once it's all signed, sealed, and done, that I believe Denrec indemnifies the developer for any future harm. So if somebody gets sick 10 years from now, the developer is not responsible. Is that correct? Okay. It's a question to complicate to. The other thing, and if you, I'd appreciate it if you don't read too far ahead, but feel free to
look. I'd appreciate it if you would. You've got
time it.
That much time. When that timer is empty, you're done. So you tell
us what
you want to
know. How many minute timer is that, Mr. Chairman?
Don't worry about it. Just start talking.
Okay. I have 2 points of opposition I'd like to make. The first one is on page 2, and it is that the pollutant data that's been reported over the past 10 years is unreliable and understated, and I'll briefly cover why. One, Denrec failed to follow its own chain of custody for toxic sample requirements, and the field sample data sample collection tracking reporting doesn't meet Denrec's own requirements. And I've got the requirements in this document as well as the data that shows they weren't followed. Opposition point number 2 is that blocking absorption of rainwater can contaminate our wellhead, and that the impervious cover proposed with the 216-unit arbors of Cottagedale can push contaminated materials into the aquifer. And again, I've got water, I've got aquifer data in here, wellhead data. So, like I said, there's a lot to digest. Most of these are just pictures, so the 24 pages, we'll go through it briefly. On page 3 is actually a quotation from Secretary O'Meara, where he said he's confident that such remediation can be done safely, but also fully aware that such projects require extreme diligence. And what I plan to show this evening is that extreme diligence has yet to be exhibited. Okay? We heard that the only things found in the ground was construction materials, tree stumps and the like, and I'll show that that is not the case. On page 4, Denrec's own requirements in their March 2008 soil sampling documents, and I footnoted every document that I've cited for future reference, said that all samples must be in a sealed glass container kept at 39 degrees from when they're taken to when they're delivered to the laboratory. They go on to say in their own requirements that a chain of custody is required. This is a documentation procedure that says the sample is under tight control from when it's taken to when it's delivered. And in this case, since I am being timed, which I don't appreciate, I'll move on to page 5, where Denrec's own report said there is no qualification of the results necessary in the data that had been reported and that has been discussed earlier this evening. If you go on to page 7, skipping a few, the data that was presented by Denrec showed there's toxic chemicals such as hexachlorobenzene, a known carcinogen and a developmental toxin in the soil. They also have pentachlorophenol, which is a known carcinogen. These are in there, as Ms. Hall said, at levels not believed to be hazardous, but I'd also contend those chemicals don't exist in tree stumps and they don't exist in construction materials. Other things must have been put in that landfill.
I don't think anybody ever said that that was the only thing ever put there. In fact, the testimony, I think, was that it was household waste, which is known to be able to contain a certain amount of those. Now, your time's gone, but you keep going. I'll let you know when you're done.
Thank you. I'll go quickly. On page 8, when we're talking about the chain of custody, here's a copy of the chain of custody document that came off the public record.
Okay.
And right on the slip itself, I put a red box around it. It says, custody seal was present / unbroken, yes or no? They hand wrote in none. So when the samples were received at the laboratory, there was no chain of custody seal on them. We're talking about volatile toxic chemicals here. If the vials aren't sealed properly, who knows what would have happened? It may have evaporated, it may have been tampered with. We just don't know. Moving on to page 9, there was a study done in November 2004 for chromium-6. That's a mutagen and a carcinogen. Nobody wants to deal with chromium-6 if it's present. And when you read through that document, What you'll find is they showed what's on page 10, a plot plan with three wells, monitoring well 1, 2, and 3. If I go to page 11, there was three sample logs in that document. And I expected they corresponded to wells 1, 2, and 3. I copied excerpts from those documents in here, and the very top excerpt shows site sample was Jackson Pit, well designation was monitoring well 1. When you look over to the sample designation, it says well 1, but there's no QC sample designation there. So it's like, okay, not a bad sample. Well number 2, you look at it, there is no sample designation on the official log of that sample. So when they took the sample, they didn't write it down. You know, chain of custody says that it must be written down, must be tracked from here all the way through to the analytical lab in Newcastle that did the testing. So.
Okay, I think you've made your point about chain of custody. I want you to move on.
I'll move on. Then we can move on to, okay, page 14 wraps up the chain of custody discussion, and it says without that, the credibility of the data that's been generated over the past, you know, X number of years has to be questioned. I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong. It's just in question.
Right.
And in my opinion, I go back to Mr. O'Meara's comment, extreme diligence is required, and I don't think that's been demonstrated in the record.
All right.
And that new wells, et cetera, must be developed on. Opposition point number 2 will answer some of the questions I heard raised here earlier this evening, and it has to do with the wellhead contamination. The Sussex County Groundwater Availability Study of March 2009, funded by DENREC to the Geological Survey, mapped all the aquifers in the county. It's a wonderful document, and it describes a whole bunch of data. The main thing is, they said the population growth is putting an increased load on the aquifers, and they studied where the well locations were across the county. And to my surprise, they said there was over, they looked for 2,000 wells, over 500 of which were not in the locations that they had previously thought they were. So we say there's no wells around Jackson Pit. I'm not so sure if 25% of the wells in that study weren't where they expected it to be.
Let me ask you a question at this point, because this has been puzzling me all night. There are wells around there. There is this stuff underground that's there now. Okay? Is it, are you suggesting that if that stuff is disturbed, that somehow it's going to find its way into these wells? Or could it be that whatever's out there has been getting into those wells for the last 30 years and hasn't hurt anybody? I mean, I'm just asking the question, because I don't understand why we wouldn't want to clean something up if it was a problem. It's like everybody's saying, oh, this is a problem, so don't build those units there. You know, we don't, you know, it's almost like we don't care if you don't clean the mess up. Well, so which is it? I mean, is it bad or is it not bad?
Yeah. I've not said don't build the units there.
Okay.
To answer your question, to the best of my knowledge, it's a very dynamic situation.
Yeah.
And so if you actually turn to page 17, it shows the plot and it shows the wellhead. And the wellhead currently, or at least as of, it's on the Sussex County mapping website, comes within 50 yards of the Jackson Pit property. And everything is sort of in some equilibrium. There may be some underground chemicals that are diffusing laterally over to the wells, and people may be ingesting it at low levels. I don't know that unless you went and tested the residential wells around there. And that could be done. Now, what's going to happen, though, is, and the main punchline of the second half of my opposition
is
when you start to pave over, right now, there's been computer models done by the Delaware Geological Department, and their computer models look at the equilibrium.
Right.
If you have a certain amount of rainwater here and a certain amount of rainwater there, it all sort of balances out in the soil, and there's very little lateral diffusion. You know, as a zoning board, that if you pave an entire parking lot of a shopping center, you're going to upset the hydrological balance underground, and water will start to move one way or the other. And so that is the question here.
Okay.
If you're going to put up 216 units and the associated parking spaces and all the other things, there's a reasonable probability you're going to upset the equilibrium beneath Jackson Pit, okay, where there's known to be chemical materials present.
Okay. All right.
You know, pore samples need to be done. Plate-bearing load studies need to be done.
Okay, 10-second summary.
All right. The other question was, page 19 actually shows the depth of the aquifers, everywhere from Georgetown to Lewis, and under the Jackson Pit area, they're relatively shallow.
Okay, time's up. Thank you very much. All right, who's next? Right here.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it if you'd look at it later.
Hey, hush. Excuse me, what's all the murmuring about? Am I ignoring somebody or what? All right, well, let's be quiet and listen to this gentleman. He's got the floor.
Hand out to the five gentlemen here.
Sure. What is this we're looking at?
You're looking at...
Or you need to give us your name.
My name is Robert Berlinski. I'm an Eagle Point homeowner in Lewis. I want to bring to the attention of the Sussex County Planning and Zoning Commission a number of loose ends regarding the wetlands in Jackson Pit. To quote Dr. Evelyn Moormeyer, president of Coastal and Estuarine Research, Inc. in Lewis, and I'm quoting, in the decades preceding the 1970s, Delaware lost hundreds of acres of wetlands.
All right, hold on a second. Just tell us what your issue is with this piece of property, okay? We are well-versed in wetlands, the laws of wetlands, the history of wetlands.
How can I introduce my document into the public record?
You may.
How can I?
Hand it to the director, it'll be introduced.
Okay.
But tell us, I don't want all the history, tell us what your concern is with this property. Is it your concern that a proper wetlands delineation has not been done?
Well, sir, you're cutting me off, and I can't.
You're exactly right.
Okay.
I'm asking you to address the issue at hand.
Okay,
here.
I'm going to submit this document for the public record, as you have asked, and I want to speak about three other issues which have come about since I've listened to the presentation. Okay, I will table the discussion of my primary issue and just enter it as public record.
It'll be part of the record whether you say it or,
fine,
you say
fine.
It or not.
Fine, if you don't want me to give my presentation, that's entirely up to you, and I respect it.
I want you, if you're you to confine your remarks to this specific piece of property.
I'm not going to.
Well, then submit them, and then you may take a seat.
I have three issues that I want to address. You told me that...
Confine them to this piece of property right here, okay? What is the issue with involving this piece of property? Because that's the subject of this public hearing.
We have palustrine, emergent, and forested wetlands that appear on the document I gave you, okay, that have not been identified. Now, you're causing me to go out of order here, and I don't think that's fair.
Sir, I'm going to cause you to sit down if you keep arguing with me, okay?
Okay.
Now, make your point, please.
I'm not going to make a point.
All right, then, take a seat.
Okay. I want to address three other issues. You told me, you spoke earlier.
I just told you to make your point. Three other issues, fine.
Okay.
But tell me what's wrong
with this. I'm not speaking anymore on that issue. I'm handing that in as a public document.
Wonderful.
Okay. The other issues are, I want to talk about these aerial photos. They're very nice, but they're not up to date. I've lived in Eagle Point at the intersection of Village and Brighton. My building's been there for 2 years, since 2007. It doesn't even appear. And yet, this map, so the date of this map is August 2009. What are we looking at?
Well, obviously, you're looking at a photograph that they obtained somehow, some way, that they, that maybe doesn't have all the places on it.
Maybe it's 2 years old, and they're putting out the date 2009.
Well,
not a very accurate representation, in my opinion.
Well, rest assured that every one of us has been down there. I want to remind you all, we live with you guys. We all live in Sussex County.
Okay.
We drive the roads. We go visit these sites. We've seen them, okay? We know what's around there, so I wouldn't worry too much about the date of the photograph.
Okay,
that's
not going
to be an issue.
Mr. Schrager also brought up the fact we're talking about community interconnectivity.
Yeah.
He said that going up Village Drive, which is phase two of Eagle Point, that there was a connector to the Home Depot parking lot. He is in error.
Sir, that is not what he said. He said there was a road there. He didn't know if...
That's
if,
exactly if, right. He didn't know.
And he said that.
And he is wrong. So why did he even bring it up? The only public road that goes into Eagle Point is called Eagle Point Drive, and it connects Shady Lane with the Home Depot parking lot. There is no other interconnection.
Now, relate that back to this piece of property. You've got 10 seconds to tell me what that has to do with this site. Why is all that an issue? For you, why is that an issue?
You seem to be
more interested in pointing out that people are not being truthful or something than you are.
Isn't that an issue? Aren't we all supposed to be truthful?
You were wrong, sir, because I heard what the man said, and I just told you what he said. He said he wasn't really sure. We were having a discussion about interconnectivity.
Right.
Okay. Nobody did anything wrong. We were just having a discussion.
And I'm pointing out that he was in error.
Okay.
I know he was in error, okay?
Fine.
That's all.
What's your next question
is, we were talking about the 20-foot-high buffers.
Yes.
Okay? I took a look at some of the photographs, and I was just interested to see examples, illustrations of these buffers on some of the developments that they have built. Okay. I didn't see any.
Okay.
Is it possible that some of them could be put up so that we could observe them?
See a picture of a buffer?
Of the buffers, because I noticed there are photographs of developments that they have built.
Well, I don't know if I'll ask them if they have any with them.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
And this, you will get a copy of this for the public record at the end of the meeting.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sir.
Okay. Yes, sir, in the orange shirt right in the middle there. Come on. Okay, I want to remind everybody this is a public hearing about a specific piece of land. I don't want to hear any more expounding about state government or this guy being a liar or that guy being or whatever. Talk to me about this site, please.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, Commission. My name is Glendon Jackson. I reside at 33372 Mackenzie Way with my wife and two children. I am a resident of this vicinity all my life. I've lived at this property I'm at now probably about 31 years. Before that, I lived just on the other side of Israel Church, which is just feet away from me. That's where I was born and reared. The property in question that we're referring to here this evening is actually property that was owned by my uncle and my aunt, Harlan and Bernice Jackson. Growing up, my uncle was in the construction business, and he used the property to dig the dirt out and sell the dirt, which, as we know it, is the Jackson Borough. During that time, this was, I guess, back in the 60s, 70s, I worked with my uncle quite a lot. I've hauled a lot of dirt out of there.
Sir, it's 10 minutes of 10.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Let's get to the point.
Well, the point I'm trying to make is the area was backfilled and used as a landfill. The gentleman before me mentioned about it being more in there in the landfill than household garbage and so forth. Well, he's exactly correct.
Okay.
I'm a witness. I can tell you what is in there, and it ranges from refrigerators to car batteries to asphalt to concrete to tree stumps to just about anything and everything. Back in the day, the laws around the environment and so forth were a lot different. We didn't really non-existent per se.
Yes.
So you can imagine what went in there, and everything and anything went in there. Again, I live on this road going back to this proposed development. I firsthand experience trying to get out on Plantations Road, especially during the summertime, is almost impossible. I've instructed my family, when you get to the Plantation Road, if they want to go left, don't even attempt to try to cross two lanes of traffic to go left towards 24. Go right, go down, make a U-turn, whatever they got to do, because it's that bad. It's not been mentioned tonight, but today's Thursday, I guess it was Tuesday, my wife called me, and someone was that I have a vacant property next to me, I had a 2-acre parcel. Someone, I guess, from the county was there installing a sign to the fact that a hearing is going to be coming up on October. I don't have the exact date, but anyhow, sometime in October, concerning a proposed daycare center. We've heard plenty of conversation tonight about traffic and so forth with a daycare center, proposed daycare center, not established, but proposed daycare center. We can just about imagine how much more traffic, if that would be approved, would be encountered.
It's a hearing for another day.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, that's for sure.
Let's stay with this one.
Yes, sir. Well, I was here probably, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 years ago, standing at this very same podium. Face is a little different than what they were then, but it might have been a little longer than that. But anyhow, it was Rubino was here, or one of the representatives, a lady, name escaped me. But anyhow, they were wanting to develop this property. At that time, it was said that everything was going to be removed. All the debris that had been put in there over years and years and years were going to be removed, completely removed. I asked the question at that time, who was going to oversee that? And I was told Demrec. And my reply was, well, there's going to be someone else overseeing it. And they said, well, who? I said, that's going to be me, because I'd like to see it. I know what was put in there. If they're going to remove it, I want to see this. Well, nevertheless, you know as well as I know, it has not been removed. They did go back there after the fact, and they dug some test pits and so forth. And for whatever reason, it was abandoned. It's never been done. And now they're proposing this again. People just don't really realize what's in there. They really don't. And as far as Demrec was speaking tonight, Mrs. Hall, I don't know if she's ever been to the site. I'd like to ask that question if I could. Okay, I appreciate that. And I'm asking that because when I was here 4, 5, 6 years ago, whatever representative from Rubino came up here and said a lot of things that weren't true, and it came out when I asked the question, she had never even been to the site. Didn't even know where it was. So I'm just curious.
It is possible to know something about the site without ever having been there.
I agree.
I understand what you're saying, and I'll find out for you.
Okay, I appreciate that.
I'm going to ask you to kind of summarize for us, if you would.
Well, summary is some of the things that was actually said here tonight I have to disagree with. Like I said, I've lived there all my life. As far as anything being removed from that property, nothing has been removed from this property. Trees have been cut down, true. Grounded up, thrown right back onto the property. There's been test pits dug, true. Nothing has been removed, nothing. I've lived there. A lot has been moved in, but nothing been moved out. Another concern I have, the dirt lane going from Plantation Road to this property. Again, back in the day, it was used motor oil dumped on that road for various reasons, compaction, and keep the dust down, et cetera, et cetera. So that's sure the biggest.
Yeah, they mentioned that they hadn't tested that area yet, but they were planning to.
I did hear that.
So yes. They're going to find out what's there.
I did hear that. It just baffles me, number one, that we're to this point, and from what Demrec is saying, a complete investigation of what's on the property has never been completed. It seems to me that should have taken place well before this. I mean, like I said, Rubina was here years ago, and they're supposed to be going to clean it up, never did, and now these people are going to come clean it up. So what's changed from the time Rubina was going to clean it up, supposedly the hazards or whatever, and now what's changed between that time and this time? I really don't know, and I can't see the connection there. Last but not least, as far as, again, the traffic, And you gentlemen, you said yourself, you've lived here all your life or been around here quite a while.
We've all been to the site. We've all seen the site, been to numerous sites around there. So.
And that's good. And
we don't know as well as you do. But
no, and I encourage you, you should do that. Yes, sitting there, you should go to every site that's brought up to you. I agree, to have some knowledge of what's going on. Traffic, it is really terrible. And I can't, for the life of me, cannot understand with the amount of units they're proposing. Just say two vehicles per unit. This is not counting all the utility vehicles, electric company, gas company, whatever, trash companies, cable companies, so forth. As much traffic as it's going to be. I'm not going to even be able to get out of my driveway onto the road going to Plantation. I won't even be able to get out. And last but not least, I just would appreciate everything was said here tonight. I concur with it. I mean, I believe everything said here tonight was right on target. And I know it's ultimately left up to you gentlemen to make a decision, and I just trust that you'll make the right decision.
Our job is to make a recommendation to county council. Right. County council will make the final decision. And just so all of you know there's another hearing. There'll be another hearing.
September?
So, yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Very much. Okay, let's stay with this side for a second. The blue shirt. Okay, now I'm going to ask you all, if you would, we've heard about traffic, we've heard about brownfields, we've heard about a number of things. Let's try to give us something new or keep it short if it's just going to be a ditto.
You'll be happy with my presentation. And my name is Robert Steinbeck. I live in Henlopen Landing on 33092 East Light Drive. All I want to know is how could you approve this or recommend this without knowing what's in there and making sure that someone goes down really deep and with all these core samples and finds out what's in there before? How could you make a recommendation? Because from what I've seen, it's too loose for people to say they're going to watch over this and do that. Why don't we look at the site, go down deep, find out, and then you can say, well, it's perfectly clean. But you can't say that right now. So how can you make a recommendation?
Well, I'll answer your question, okay? One can make a recommendation subject to all those things being done. You know, as a practical matter, if you were going to build a house, okay, would you pay for all the design work and all the subsurface investigation and everything that has to be done before you knew whether or not you could build your house? Probably not. You would want to know you did all those things, you could build a house.
If I knew it was over a brownfield, I would definitely, and I really wanted to build on that site, which I can't imagine why anyone wants to now, but I certainly wouldn't do it until it was checked out, cleaned up, and then I would be ready.
Let me ask you a question. Would you spend a couple of $100,000 to clean up your building lot, not knowing whether or not you could build a house on it if you cleaned it up?
If I really wanted to live there and I had the money, I would, but I certainly wouldn't.
You know the answer is no.
Yes, okay. And I don't see how.
So that's how that works. How that would work is, and that's why you don't get these investigations for hundreds of thousands of dollars on a guess. They ask for permission to do something subject to all these other things happening. Okay? So that's why you see projects that get approved and don't get built sometimes. Well, of course, lately it's been because the economy is so bad. But other times it's because they can't meet the requirements for having a project. So it isn't going to be a matter of yes and then it's going to happen. You know, there'll be a lot of strings if it even gets approved. You know, we're not anywhere near making that decision yet. But
I just don't agree with the plan that the developer can be the cleanup person at the same time Because he's serving two masters. I know it's not your fault.
Call
it's
your
the state
representative. When you get home tonight, call your state representative, okay?
Did he leave?
Call your state representative and share that with
well,
him.
Well, then we need the laws changed.
Well, there you go.
Thank
That's
you.
Right. You're welcome, sir. Yes, sir, over here on the corner. Well, we'll put it in the record for you. All right, sir. Mr. Lang, put it in the record. All right, sir. You got it.
My name is James Curtis. I live in Eagle Point, and I'm a retired history professor from the University of Delaware. I taught at the university for 33 years at both graduate and undergraduate courses, and during that time, I directed a number of research projects on the Nanticoke tribe. I'm here tonight out of concern for the procedure that has yet to take place for determining the additional unmarked grave sites. As I said in the letter, I think it would be a shame if anything contributes to our knowledge of this vibrant Nanticoke culture should be lost to the blade of the developer's bulldozer. I'm aware of a very famous burial ground in New York City that they had to stop completely the construction of a skyscraper in order to properly deal with the human remains that were there. So if the digging is going to take place with bulldozers, I think the chance of sensitive dealing with human remains is very slim. On the other hand, if an independent archaeological concern were hired to determine the presence and to recommend the proper disposal as required by Section 7 of the Delaware law, then I think it would be a very different situation. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you sharing that with us. All the way over here with the hat. I want to hear something different.
It's going to be quick. I can guarantee that. So
indulge
me
is?
For a second. My name is Dennis Coker.
Okay.
I'm chief of the Lenape Indian Tribe of Delaware, and I have a letter I'd like to read just real quickly and give it to you for the record.
Go right ahead.
I have recently been made aware that the reference project threatens a Native American cemetery located in the vicinity of the north-northwest property line of the subject parcel. The Norwood Corsi Jackson Daisy Cemetery, identified on the described property line, has been investigated by SHPO and determined to probably extend beyond the property line onto the reference property. Without an effort to properly delineate the cemetery, the extent to which the cemetery extends into the reference property cannot be determined. Native American cemeteries are the most sacred of properties of our communities, and every effort should be made to identify and protect them. The Unmarked Human Remains Act is a tool to ensure adequate protection of these sites. It has also been suggested that there is a medium to high probability of prehistoric archaeological sites within the reference project area. It should be determined whether any federal funding has been utilized at any stage of this project, which would have required compliance with Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act. In closing, it is the position of the Lenape Indian Tribe of Delaware that issues concerning Native American cultural resources receive the utmost attention and protection as required by federal and state law where applicable. Your attention to this matter is of great importance to the Native American population of Delaware. Juan Ishii, Dennis Jacoby, Chief of the Indian Tribe of Delaware.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, who's next? Yes, ma'am, right here in the front, green.
Thank you, Ben.
Next to the cell phone.
Not mine. My name
I don't
is
know. She was pointing this way.
My name is Linda Kangan Bennett, and I'm a resident of Eagle Point. I'm only going to address those issues about transportation as outlined in the July 2008 Scope of Study letter, the Orth Rogers Traffic Impact Study of October 2008, and the PLUS report of December 2008. Someone alluded to the fact that a new TIS is being required. I'm going by what I had, not that. First, the scope of study did not include the completion of phase two of Eagle Point and the added traffic turning both right and left from Shady Road onto Plantation Road. Second, no mention was made nor any study done of traffic entering Route 1 south from Shady Road. Google Maps instructions recommends, for example, that drivers from Eagle Point turn south onto Route 1 and then make a U-turn at the traffic light at West Coates Road. That's the route most locals take, not the route using Plantation Road to get to the Five Points intersection. Having more drivers from Cottagedale will only make this situation more dangerous than it is now. Certainly with 216 apartments, there will be more than the 186 trips daily that someone else mentioned. According to the results and the recommendations of the Orth Rogers study, no improvements are anticipated as part of the Cottagedale apartments except for the site driveway that's being assumed to have a T-intersection with a shared left-right turn westbound approach controlled section by a stop sign. And I'm quoting from there. Was a study ever done regarding the access of emergency vehicles? Is there adequate space for large fire trucks and turnarounds for ambulances? I was told that after the site was developed, then help would be forthcoming regarding emergency vehicles.
That's wrong. What'll happen
this is what I was told.
Yeah, well, what'll happen is if they in fact get approval, then they'll have to deal with the fire marshal's office, who will make absolutely
that.
Certain
okay.
that they
well,
have.
That's I'm just going yeah. by what I was told.
I understand. That's why I'm trying to help you out.
As far as the less formal connections, my question is, what would Eagle Point residents gain by being able to walk to or through Cottagedale? There's nothing walkable through there. On the other hand, contrary, I am afraid that young adults from Cottagedale, and if these are apartments, these are younger than I, would return noisily from Grotto Pizza, Grand Slam, Sports Bar, or the Tattoo Parlor at the intersection of Shady and Route 1 late in the evening or after last call.
Well, when you're coming home from the Tattoo Parlor, which way do you go?
The only time that I come that way is when I come home from church on Sunday mornings. Thank you.
That was a great answer, wasn't it? All right.
Church.
Okay, I am going to ask you. We understand that you're concerned with traffic. I'm going to ask you to summarize it, if you would, if you're done. If you're done, you can sit down.
So in summary, it's just a question of there's more traffic than even the study
got it.
Noted. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Okay. Yes, I'm going to let you go. Come on. All right. Now, I really don't want to hear about traffic anymore, not because we don't love you, but we've heard all about traffic.
Heard all about traffic.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
I'm Teresa Day, and I was born and raised down here, right in Belltown, right across the street from where I live now. And love it down here. Have a lot of concerns about this development that's getting ready to take place. It sits right in my backyard, for one thing, and it's going to be very close to my patio, my deck.
I understand.
Very concerned about the safety. I'm not here during the week. I don't know what's going to happen, you know, when I'm not here during with, you know, these new residents coming in.
How about the ones that are already there? Do they worry?
Well, everybody looks out for our property. You know, we're a community. So now you're introducing a community with lower income, you know, families and stuff, and we just don't know what's going to happen. So I'm concerned about that. I ditto everything, you know, that's been said here tonight, you know, especially with the, you know, the deceased and, you know, the grave sites and all of that. But one main concern I have also is property values. We bought here to, you know, we would like to retire here, hopefully, but if we don't, if we try to sell our property, what's going to happen to our property values if we put low-income housing behind us? That's a concern I have. You don't have to answer it, but that's a major concern I have.
Okay. Well, I can't answer it except to tell you that your property value is probably taking a hit without this development.
It is, but it's going to be worse.
Yeah, maybe.
So I'd like to for that to be part of the record as well.
Okay, you're on it. Thank you. Who's next? Yes, sir, all the way in the back. Green shirt, sunglasses. All right, then. Don't tell us yet. Come on up here and tell us your name, and then you can tell us whatever you want, but I'd like you to do it in 3 minutes.
All right. My name's Thomas Pargo. I live at Eagle Point. I'm retired. I'm not a soil scientist by any means.
No. Just really, we're having a hard time hearing up here, so we can't have conversations
going on
in the audience.
Yeah, side.
And, you know, we want to hear what this gentleman has to say.
Side chatter. He might say something you want to hear.
Thank you.
I'm not a soil scientist by any means.